So I get to introduce the speaker. Off topic, or off script, I signed up for today because I wanted to make sure I was going to be here to hear her. I know Joy. I've known her over the years that she's lived here. Our paths don't cross often, and so I was excited to hear about her most recent work and what she's been doing. And so for today, Joy Davis Ripley is going to explore these times that we're living in through her spirituality and her art, rooted firmly in her identity as a mother. And parenting is so important. Joy is a part-time college professor and community artist. In recent years, she has initiated a number of community art projects about mental illness and resilience. She's always looking for more community members who would want to be a part of her projects. So let's welcome Joy.
Thank you, Ruth, for that lovely introduction. And while you were speaking, I think I've known you for about 18 years, and I was thinking back over those years and thinking about how you have nurtured me from time to time, and you seem to know the exact right thing to say. And then I started thinking about other women in the audience, like Kathy and Gail and Carolyn, and there are just so many of you here who have nurtured me over the years, and I just feel very grateful to be back to talk about my work, so thank you for having me again. What's wrong with mothering? So the first part of my title is a little bit flippant, but I want us to think about mothering, what mothering can mean, and I'd like for us to try to think of it as an active site of resistance, especially for these times we're living through. So, as part of my claim that mothering can and should be an active site of resistance, I do want to make clear that I'm using mother and mothering in very distinct ways. I'm emphasizing not the gender, but the acts of nurturing and compassion and caring that we do for others, to others, those close to us, those in our community. Here is a picture of my husband with our two daughters, and as odd as it may seem, my husband has actually taught me a lot about mothering and how to mother. Some of you here today may know that after I survived my childhood, for the rest of my life, up until right now, I have suffered from very severe PTSD. And over the years, as I've become more and more immersed in my art, I have found that the more I allow myself the time and the space to be creative, the more layers I can start to dig through, and the more healing I can experience. One huge area of healing for me is nature. I often like to wander in nature, just see what I see what I come across. Nature, for me, really helps me to regulate my emotions and my nervous system. And we're finding out more and more these days that regulating our nervous systems, that's crucial for healing, and especially at a time like this, when there are so many deliberate acts of harm and cruelty being committed. Here is a dragonfly who did me a favor. He hovered for a moment so I could snap a picture. This next dragonfly, unfortunately, was not as lucky. I came upon this wing and little, tiny, tiny little legs scattered in the grass one morning. And I didn't see the legs at first. They were so tiny. But the dew glistening on the wing caught the sunlight, caught my eye. And so I stopped and I was like, what is that? What is it a part of? And then as I began to examine the area around it, I saw the teeny tiny little legs of the dragonfly. Sometimes when I take pictures, lines come to me. Sometimes I'll write poems. The poem I wrote as an homage to this dragonfly is a little bit long, so I'll just read the first few lines and the last few lines. Dragonfly, I traced the history of your will to survive in the divide, the battle leaving your wings and legs to litter the narrow space. How could your thousands of lenses miscalculate, misjudge your mighty foe? One wing is enough, a miracle of engineering, though not enough to flee. Hover, react in milliseconds, teach physicists your secrets. One wing is an entire world. So Chuck and I were blessed with two very inquisitive daughters a little bit over a decade ago. And a few years back when we were in Tennessee, my home state, and we were dealing with very hard matters related to Parkinson's and stroke and home care, healthcare workers, my daughters were becoming increasingly restless. And in Tennessee, there are lots of snails, and so I gathered some snails. And here, I don't know how well you can see it, but they're entranced by three snails climbing up the bottle of lotion. Their ability to lose themselves in moments like this has been so inspirational to me. From watching my daughters, I feel I've learned once again how to lose myself in particular moments. I know it's a little cliche to say this, but there is something about allowing yourself to become childlike in your wonder, allowing yourself to lose yourself in those moments. Whether it's eating watermelon on a warm summer day, or as soon as it starts sprinkling, throwing on your rain boots and trying to catch raindrops. So one of the ways I try to lose myself in nature is just to encourage myself to be curious about what I'm actually seeing, and try to see it in new ways. For me, this has taken the form of trying really carefully to observe things around me so that I can understand them better. An example of this is a spider I spotted on the bridge as I was taking my daughters for a walk one afternoon in their stroller. I also try to be present for my daughters. One of my goals as a mother is to witness what is going on with them, to witness what they're experiencing, what they're going through. And here, after our younger daughter had listened to our older daughter gloat about how the tooth fairy was going to visit her and she was going to get special treats, our younger daughter, who's usually very, very active, she just stood for a moment, very quiet, thinking to herself, and then she said to me, "Mommy, will you write this down for me? Dear vacuum fairy, please come to our house and vacuum it and leave me two treats. Thank you." As I've slowed down and tried to capture specific moments with my camera. I've tried my best to turn many of those moments into art, whether it's allowing the photo to help me pin some lines, which may or may never make it to an actual form of a poem, or taking my original photographs and designing them onto clothing. So here on the left, the original photograph for these leggings, we were at a campground and it was a very warm summer evening and the cottonwood trees began releasing their seeds. And their seeds, as they floated over the colors cast by the sunset, turned a sort of reddish. And it was just a beautiful moment, so I've saved it in these leggings. On the right is a skirt I made from another original photograph, and it's so hard to balance everything, all of your obligations in your life. And so on this afternoon, I was taking a photograph of a peacock feather, and in the background, you can see if you look at the skirt, the green is the grass right next to the blue of my daughter's kiddie pool, where they were splashing in the water and having fun. These are a few other moments I've captured. For anyone who might be listening at home and isn't able to see what I'm putting up on the screen, this is a macro image, a close-up, which includes the eye of a painted turtle. This next image is one of my older daughter walking over some tracks not too far from our home. This next image is of a tree on a hillside. Coming down from one branch on the right is an old tire swing, and in the left, running along the tree, and then in the foreground is an old fence. Always in my art, I'm wanting to capture details, especially details that might seem a little unusual to me. So I actually didn't notice when I took this picture of the blue heron, I didn't notice until after I had gotten home and blown it up on my big desktop screen that this heron actually has a teeny tiny fish in its mouth. So it has caught itself a little snack and the shadow is underneath. At this stage in my work, so this is the early period of what I consider the early period of my work, I was guided by a principle called astronomy, which is a fancy art term that means defamiliarization. Defamiliarizing is to try to get the viewer to slow down and notice in a certain way, to perceive in a certain way. Sorry, I keep making these loud noises with the microphone. A few more examples, a shell in grass, far from the seashore. A pair of butterflies near the backwater, performing a most elegant copulation. A sunset captured in a rail at the train yard. Even the eye of my daughter can provide inspiration. Here is her eye framed by lashes and bangs. And when I saw this, I wrote these lines. To see a galaxy in a watchful eye, or a fractal in the smallest fern, before the self in I does die, my mind must quiet, open, learn. I try to make art out of the smallest moments. Even something as silly as a banana dropped on a kitchen floor and left there, forgotten. So in the tradition of Wordsworth, if any of you are familiar with him, I call this poem an ode to a desiccated banana discovered on my kitchen floor. There was a time when kitchen, closet, and bathroom, car, house, bike, and every last thing in sight, to me did seem bathed in clean, orderly light, the glory of a with a much used broom. It is not now as it was in yesteryear. No matter which way I turn, in bright midday or deepest night, the tot's messes rebound and remain all too clear. As our earthly home adorns herself each season, now in such color as to make the birds blush, and now in cold, glittering snow dust, so do I repeat my days, fill tiny tummies, brush tangled hair, wipe babes' bottoms, and kiss away each care. And yet do I search my mind for a reason. How came ye on this kitchen floor? How many weeks have you lain thus? Were you here before the wintry horror? Tell me, what have you seen, and what forgotten? O ye piles of clothes begging to be folded, O ye children writing on walls waiting to be scolded, is there not eternity here? Does not the universe trail its glory even now? Mindless of the filthy carpet and litter box, the dust bunnies and cobwebs, and mocks my every attempt at methods and systems, while through my fingerprint smudged window pane, I see the rot of old leaves swallowed by swings. Excuse me. I see the rot of old leaves swallowed by spring's returning undertow. Bananas decay, cracker crumbs abide, stains endure. And I would fain see a hint of eternity in a flower unfolding or in a babe's 2 a.m. unmolding, sweaty fingers grasping my neck in fear and sorrow. A few more images. I love trees. I return to trees over and over again in my work. Here, though, a ladybug is meeting her reflection on a rail line. This is another view of the ladybug. And she's on the side of one of those little train track rails. Here, my youngest daughter meeting goats for the first time. A turning point for me, many of you may know that in recent years, I've moved away from what I call my functional artware, with an emphasis on fun and functional. So I've moved away from printing my photos on clothing, and I have moved toward doing more community work on mental health issues like mental health and resilience. So a turning point for me came when one afternoon I was talking to a friend about art. He's also an artist, and we were just talking about some of the things we struggle with. And all of a sudden, he stopped me and he said, "Let me ask you, what scares you? As an artist, what scares you?" And as I thought about that, he said, "Do that thing. Whatever it is that scares you, do it." So one way I began doing this when I was still working with my clothing line is one afternoon. So I have the original photograph at the bottom, and then as it's printed on a dress and it's hanging on a mannequin at an art show. So one afternoon I was exploring a junkyard and I came across a smashed bulldozer. So I climbed up into the cab of the bulldozer and then I started taking pictures through the shattered windshield. So this is what you see. I'm in the cab of that smashed bulldozer. And the picture, the ground, the snow, the bare trees, was taken through that shattered windshield. So this one, this particular print spoke really deeply to me. It feels that there's a commonality here. Maybe many, many of us can relate to this experience of feeling shattered, certainly at times, in a world that is very much broken. So I used this dress in a fundraiser for what used to be called the Women and Children's Center and now is called the Advocacy Center. And so that's also one way that I have sent my art off into the world. I think if we are able to dig deeply enough, keep going, even when we come across those shattered pieces of ourselves, that's where we find our strength. This is an abandoned house that I found outside of Lanesboro, and it prompted these lines for me. Look at you inspecting the windows, pulling up an edge of the carpet, stomping the kitchen floor. That sagging spot in the kitchen hasn't escaped you. It lacks support in the cellar below. Look at you walking the floors, measuring distances, envisioning the layout of rooms. Look at you moving in as though you already own the house of my body. Few more images, and hoarfrost on the left, my younger daughter holding green hydrangea that she had picked on the right. I recently had the great privilege of interviewing a young writer, Hmong American writer named Cao Kalia Yang. She has come to Winona a number of times and spoken. Some of you may have heard her. She's an amazing speaker, an amazing author, and she agreed to be interviewed for the project that I'm working on right now, which is how do we become more resilient? If we are someone who doesn't always feel as resilient as we want to, if we feel buffered by the winds of political decisions, if we find it hard to keep going, maintaining our own equilibrium, good mental health, emotional well-being, what can we do? How can we build resilience? So she is someone who answered the question by turning to her past and the stories that she grew up on that were told to her by her mother and by many of the other relatives in her life. Okay, apologies. I've just gotten a little note that I need to wrap things up. So I'm hoping that all of you can see this project in the future. I did not plan it this way, but it just happened to turn out that I interviewed, all of the women I interviewed were women of color, and they work deeply in their communities, building strategies of resilience with compromised populations, and they're also mothers. So I just want to read this last paragraph that she wrote or that she spoke about. She says, "I come from a people, the Hmong. We have no word for art. But art is the basket you make to carry your food. Art is when your boys are crying out because someone you love is gone. Art is the song that escapes when the wind blows and is carried far from you. My mother and my grandmother, all of my elders, the way in which art was embedded in their lives, the ways in which spirituality itself lived in the world around them, that sensitivity to it was ingrained in me long before I was even aware of it." One of the things which is probably obvious from what I just read is that she experiences resilience. She builds her resilience by writing her books and sending them out into the world. And as I have been working with these women, I'll just say this quickly to wrap up, and I'm sorry for going over my time, but as I have been working with these women in these frightening times, I have become more certain than ever that at the same time we allow ourselves moments of peace away from all the turmoil, we also have a responsibility to witness what is happening, especially to these communities to whom such cruelty and harm is being undertaken. And just to end, I am wearing one of my favorite necklaces today. It says "Disobey." And I just want to encourage you all to resist and disobey in whatever ways you're able, whatever ways feel good to you. Thank you.
Joy, you are such a special person. Who taught you that you were so special, and where did you get the courage to follow this specialness? Who taught you this, that you were special?
Thank you for that question, John. That's an amazing question. I'm not quite sure how to answer it, honestly, because I do come from a childhood in which there was such abuse, ongoing abuse present, that I never, ever thought that I would live to be 30. There was no future. I just could not envision a future. I think certainly my husband, who has accepted me as I am, especially with that long history of trauma, he was probably the first person I told everything to, and he was able to handle it. And then I mentioned some of the women in the audience here. When we moved here to Winona, I feel so grateful to have wound up in a community where older women were willing to take the time to nurture me, to love me. So I don't know if that answers your question, but my heart just feels full of gratitude for being here. Yeah.